This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie, good Sunday morning to you.
It's always a good Sunday morning when we're getting ready to talk about food.
Yeah.
We've migrated away from food for a bit, but now we're back on our favorite topic.
Totally.
And we're bringing somebody that we haven't had in here for over 3 years.
A friend.
Yes. Drake Dobke, who launched in Missoula Sakatumi and then Michi Ramen Bar. Right. And when those first hit the marketplace, we had him in here. We haven't had him in here since. So we want to hear about what's been going on. And he's the new co-owner and co-proprietor of
Florabella.
Florabella.
No, it's exciting. You know, we love talking about food, and he's a foodie.
And he's been traveling all over the world eating food. At the same time, he's been developing his restaurant. So it's good to hear what he's thinking about the industry, what he's thinking about how this all fits in here, what the market looks like, what's happening in the restaurant business in Missoula. It's all good, and it'll make me hungry.
You know how a community values its influencers, its leaders, your politicians, your community civic-minded leaders. Drake is a leader because he's bringing great food into the community.
Sure.
Right? He's introducing us to some really challenging dishes, interesting dishes at Sakatumi, right?
Yep.
Ramen, which is we knew was an underserved market, and you and I both loved when he,
sure,
opened,
when he opened
that up. And we've always been hankering for great Italian.
Yep, and now we have all three, and we're going to hear more about it.
Yeah, and we do know that, like, rising tides lift all boats, and so when you bring good restaurants in, it just ups everybody else's game.
Yeah, they have to, because who's going to want to go get a grilled cheese sandwich somewhere when you have all these other options? You have to put some bacon on it and some, you know, Parmesan on the outside to crisp it up.
You're right. Well, Arnie and I are going to talk about our favorite subject, food, with one of our favorite guests, Drake Dobke, back after this. Arnie, we are back with our guest, Drake Dobke.
Drake, you know, it's been a good while since you were last here in the studio with us. At that time, you know, Michi Ramen had opened and your second Sakatumi had opened, and now you've migrated into some other sorts of things. But for our listeners, could you kind of go way back and give us sort of the history of how you got to where you are now, and then we can catch up with what you're doing today?
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks for having me. So I guess if you want to know the history, so
we don't need to hear about childbirth.
No, we're not going to go that. We're not going that far back.
But your professional career.
Yeah. So, you know, we started it in Big Fork with the original Sakatumi, and it was the most shoestring that it could possibly be. So people see the stuff that's going on now and don't realize that sort of the genesis was, I mean, we started it with $10,000.
So, and what year was that?
It was in 09.
09.
And it was, I mean, I didn't even know you could start a restaurant with that little. I mean,
you could start up maybe a food truck, right?
Maybe, dude. I mean, like, we had old equipment, like freezers that didn't have like doors on it that we had to duct tape close, and we had, you know, like a old kegerator that was a refrigerator that I had to reach into to like grab stuff out of for service. We had ice bins that were acting as, you know, mise en place. So yeah, it was about as shoestring as you could get.
So you had less than $10,000, and you started a restaurant in 2009 in Big Fork.
Yeah.
What was your thinking at that time? Had you ever run a restaurant before?
Well, I've been working in them, you know, since I could work, basically. And I was living in called it the Holy Van in Hawaii. It was holy for, you know, double entendre. It had holes in it, and it was holy. So, you know, you kind of had to say a prayer before you started it type of thing. And I was ready. I was like, look, I'm tired of living in the holy van on the beach.
Working for someone else.
Working for somebody else. So it made sense to, I called up and said, hey, is there anything available in Big Fork? And there was this unit, and that's where we still are today. So.
And you were from Montana before that, before
Correct.
You went to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Where in Montana,
Big
Drake?
Fork.
Okay.
Yeah, Big Fork.
So that was home base.
That was home, so it seemed like an obvious place to kind of
So in this time, you've been working since you were working, and you're
right.
you were working in some in variety of restaurants, including a sushi kind of place.
Sushi was the last stint, so that's what I was most
So did you start thinking about doing your own place and taking down ideas and recipes and before you ever started, or you just made the switch and then tried to figure out what you were going to do?
Yeah, it was a bit of both. I mean, you're working it, so you kind of have an idea of what your catalog is going to be and what you like to do and what you think works and stuff like that. So we kind, you know, I already knew what the food would be and kind of the sourcing and how we were going to be, how it would work. But like the business side of it, oh my God, man, that was completely shoot from the hip. Like I didn't know how to run QuickBooks. I didn't know how, like we had like old paper, like register, old paper checks. I mean, that's how we started. I mean, like even though the technology existed, like Aloha was out by then. They didn't have like the newer systems that they do now. But I mean, they had like, I just was like, I mean, we didn't have the money.
You were so, piecing it together.
Yeah, right. So you especially from the business perspective.
Right. The business side, but also on the food side, you're a foodie yourself. I know that. And so you you found things that you liked.
Exactly, yeah.
And were you sure that Montana's taste buds were prepared for what you were used to eating?
Not at all. And in fact, it was like, at first people were like, what is this, fish bait? You know, and I'm like, oh, man, like this. I don't know if this is going to work.
You well, you know, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, Montana's culinary palate has developed.
It's massively, yes.
Massively. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't that long ago people were asking for ketchup in Italian restaurants to put on top of spaghetti.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, let's be clear. So Montanans have actually developed a palate.
Yes.
But we've always had people coming from California, New York, New Jersey. You know, visitorship has increased, and they were used to this, right? Like you and I. But Montanans, locals, want this now. They're asking for, which is
I think that's the biggest difference that you start to see now is that the places that are doing kind of the higher end or like not higher end, but just like, you know, more like the technique based, like trying to do like the, you know, the good ingredients, like that's what's actually driving the market now. Like those are the successful places, the ones that do that are working on trying to deliver the highest quality product, where that wasn't true when I came down to Missoula even 6 years ago.
Well, you know, one of the things I think you'd agree that has helped that along is a lot of the media focus on celebrity chefs. I mean, most people didn't know who Anthony Bourdain was, right? And he became a media sensation. And then you have Gordon Ramsay. You got all these shows on TV. It's hard to flip through TV and not see a food-related show. And if you start watching it, you start getting interested in it. I've never had that. Where can I find that?
For sure.
Who's doing it?
And then you notice that there's a gradient, that there's a scale. And there is differences between, like, that there is a difference between what this was and what it is. And, you know,
exactly.
So you start to see the differences. And I think that just wasn't really as prevalent.
Right. For a while. You know, so you have Sakatumi and Big Fork. You started in 2009. And then how did that snowball?
Well, yeah, so we did that for a couple of years. And then I just realized that it was like, okay, this is a pretty small market. I mean, like, it's very cool because, like what you're saying, there's a lot of people that are coming from, you know, California, Arizona. They have got second homes or whatever. So they really wanted that,
right.
Like, what they were used to. So that really kind of propelled us forward. But then the locals caught on as well. So, yeah, it ended up working out. But it's still like, you know, I mean, it's a very seasonal market. You've got about 3 months of hay. And then the rest of the time, you're like, wow, this is like, we know this is a good product. We know if there was people
here,
we would be busy. And so, you know, we started looking at other markets. And so, like, Missoula became a fairly obvious market for us because it was only an hour and a half away.
Right.
A lot more people and stuff like that. We knew that if we could deliver the same product that we'd be busier more often.
And there was also the advantage of having a college workforce to find, you know, employees, because that's always a challenge.
Yeah, restaurants struggle with that for sure. But, you know, I mean, if you take care of them, they're out there for sure. So
then Sakatumi in Missoula happened, developed. And when did that open?
That was 2018, so it's been 5 years now.
Right. Wow, it's
5 years.
Isn't that wild?
And then
it was like yesterday.
There was a downstairs. there was a downstairs under it, right? And so then we got Mishi Ramen Bar.
That's right. Yeah. So there's this, like, it used to be like an old prep kitchen for the McKenzie River, and like it looked weird. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it was like you would not have imagined Mishi when you went down there the first time. It was all like Right. FRP on the walls, and it was just it was pretty dingy. You know, I mean, it wasn't dingy in the sense that it was like dirty, but it was just it's not what it is.
It's now. A basement.
But once we started peeling off the walls and we realized, like, wow, there's some really cool like brick down here, it's like we can make this look really cool. Just by cleaning up that old like glacier rock foundation that's underneath all these old buildings down in Missoula. So there's a lot of these cool basements in Missoula that can look that way. So we were excited.
Sorry to interrupt you, Arnie, but this brings up a great point, which is you have an idea and a flair from the art and aesthetic perspective for the food, but also for the decor and for the atmosphere. Where did that come from?
You know, I don't really know. I think it's been developed over time. Because the place I used to work at in Hawaii, like, they didn't have to do much. You just look out the window, there's 18 waterfalls. Like, you didn't, like, you just put a window in, it wasn't, like, a big deal.
Right.
And a lot of the restaurants I had worked in, they were doing it, but they... Like, it was just more of like kind of simple classic look that I've worked in previously. And then, you know, maybe they were funky in some way, but they weren't like, and that side of it has just gotten so much better. Like the design of restaurants, it's become such like an important piece of it. And I really think it is.
Yeah.
It's why we value artists and artwork, because it's like, it's just, it's gotta be kind of a five sensory encompassing thing. So that's been something that's developed. I've developed that skill set.
And how have you been inspired to do that? Because I know you travel a fair
amount. Traveling is probably your biggest inspiration for it. You see a couple of places that are doing it, and you're like, damn, this is like, we gotta step our game up a little
bit. Isn't it amazing to walk into a place that's doing something you've never seen before, and it's so cool?
We gotta get a little, we gotta start bringing this in, you know? So, I mean, but, you know, if you spend time in the space, you just, inevitably you start looking at the walls and be like, oh, you know what would be cool if we did this? So you start working it like that, and then it becomes just like any other skill set. But I think it is tied with the food. Like if you like beautiful things, you want to be in a beautiful space, you want beautiful food, you know, it all starts to kind of tie
together. How do you manage the staff and the workforce that you bring in for your restaurants? Because service industry is notoriously a tough job. Like, it's a lot of work. It's physically demanding, but it's also emotionally demanding because
it can be.
Right. Yeah. And there, you know, it's not a surprise. A lot of folks that work in the service industry do fall prey to, you know, over-medicating themselves to deal with the challenges of working and long hours and, you know, a client or a customer saying, this tastes not like what I was expecting. And they're disappointed, and you're just being the receiver of all that. Like, how do you help recruit for a staff that you feel is going to, in a proper and premium way? Two, how do you deal with staff where there are challenges?
I used to be kind of a little bit more high strung, I think. Like, and it's something that I had to work on. Like, you know, like, you want to create, like, take away that feeling from a management, from an ownership perspective. So they're not getting hammered on, like, both sides. Like, because you know that, like, the customers are going to be demanding and might have complaints, and there might be that emotional fatigue coming from one side regardless. We can't control that.
Mm-hmm.
But from the managerial ownership side, we try to make sure that we ensure that it's, a fair, kind, you know, like, relatively peaceful environment on our side, that we have their back. I mean, because you're only as strong as your people. Like, this is a team deal, man, and, like, it takes the team. And so you got to definitely find those people and then make sure that you take care of them. And it means that it's in compensation, but it's also in just the environment that you create, and make sure that you're, you know, I mean, you have to, you know, there's times where you have to be exact about what you want, but you can do it in a way where you're not
lording over people.
Yeah.
You're not putting an extra burden that is not necessary.
Don't add a burden. Life's hard enough, you know?
So, sure.
So that's something I've really tried to cultivate as well. It's just like
your culture.
The culture of it is to make sure that it's a good place to be, that it's a healthy place to be. It's a good environment.
And your customers looking forward to being there. Like, they're going there with great expectations. They're going to have a great meal.
Right.
They're going to have a great, you know, just 3 hours of time.
It's one hand washes the other, right? I mean, like, if I'm stressing out my staff, like, unnecessarily, then – they can feel that. The customers feel that. All of a sudden, you're like, well, why does it feel this way? And it's like, right. because, like, there's just this vibe that starts right. to get created. Now, if they, like, want to be there, then they start having love for the game. They want to be there. They want to take care of you because you take care of them. It's really, it's fairly simple, but it seems to be elusive.
You know, and in some places yeah. in the world, it's considered more of a profession Correct. Than it is here. When I stayed at, I was in Paris and stayed at one of the top hotels, Le Breston.
Right.
And the head of customer relations in the hotel had been there 31 years. And he was still enthusiastic and well-dressed and well-taken care of. And I was there when you still had to have a COVID test. And
right.
I went up to him, his name was Jean, and I said, Jean, I need a COVID test. And he said, well, would you like the doctor to come to your room? Mm-hmm. We'll make all the arrangements for you. That kind of environment where you feel like you have right. some control and the person, you know, has some confidence and some pride in his job, you know, makes it last. You know, 30 years. You don't find 30-year employees very often in restaurants and bars and nightclubs and night spots in the U.S.
I mean, I would like to see it shift that direction to more of like a
profession.
More considered to be. I mean, there's such like a negative connotation when it comes to like a server. It's like, oh, are you just going to be a server forever? It's like, yeah, maybe. Because what are we really talking about? We're
right.
talking about food and wine and hanging out with the community.
Like, yeah.
Well, if you're
isn't that what you're doing? There's reasons why people come here to hang out. Like, so right. why is it such?
And
like,
in some markets like San Francisco,
why is that a negative thing?
In markets like New York and San Francisco, servers in good restaurants make $150,000 a year.
These guys are killing it.
They really right. are killing like, it.
So.
But it's also employees that believe in you and see your success and the success of the restaurant as their success.
Yeah,
they get the ownership. Long game. Right.
Yeah, yeah. They take ownership for sure.
So let's go back to the timeline. So now you have three mm-hmm. restaurants.
Correct.
Your strength up until this point has not been management and the business side of things.
Well, I'm learning. Right.
At that point.
Yeah.
But now, did you bring in other people to be on the management side of things at three restaurants?
Yeah, I have great managers. I mean, that's really how – I mean, it's top to bottom. You got to have a great dishwasher and you have great management. But management is definitely that – there's no way to expand without right. having people that you can trust and that really understand the vision and really want to carry it forward. And so, yeah, management is super critical. So I have good managers in Big Fork. I've got good managers down here, and that's what makes it go.
So things are cruising along, doing well, and then COVID hits.
Yeah.
What did that do to your business?
You know, it was just like, it was like a fire in a kitchen, man. You know, you got to address the problem. So it's like, okay. And the hardest thing about that was like, it was such a moving target. We didn't really know like what
was going to happen.
What was happening. We didn't know what was going on. So like, you know, we weren't really getting like, no one knew. So it wasn't like, there was no one you could call. You couldn't call like the city and just say like,
right.
they were just like, oh, I don't know. I mean, like, so every day was just kind of a new fire that had to be put out. So it was a challenge, but honestly, in a way, restaurants were kind of equipped for that because that's sort of what we're in,
right.
like problem solution management, like all the time. So yeah. like,
right.
it was just an added component, but, it's like, yeah, I mean, this is what we're doing. We're always putting out fires.
Right.
So. Right. It's just another bigger fire.
It's just a bigger
and a longer fire,
different fire. Yeah. And then just not really kind of knowing how it was supposed to be done and what was really going to be the most like, cause there was the regulatory side that was saying, okay, you can do this or you can't do this. But then there was like the actual side of like trying to get information about what was
right.
going on from,
right.
like from a CDC side or from like, because no one kind of knew what was going on. So
right,
it's like, is this responsible? Is it irresponsible? Like, what is the right thing to do?
And then you have the supplier issues, right?
Yeah. And then that was a massive other thing that happened. It, you know, during and post, and we're still kind of
sure
in that, you know, era of it's getting better for sure. But
so you come out of COVID, you got three locations. They're all in sort of the, you know, the Asian seafood area.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden I hear about you can open an Italian restaurant, Florabella. So tell me about how this offshoot came about.
Well, so it was during COVID, right? Like, and I just kept driving by, you know, Cafe Dolce, the old Cafe Dolce. And I was like, man, that's just such like a shame that isn't like
great building
going. And, it was, yeah, such a great building. And we were looking at doing another project. I was a little farther out, and I just drove by the building, and I was like, man, like, I wonder if we can get Cafe Dolce. Like, so I talked to my buddy who's a real estate agent, and I was like, look, what would it take? Kind of came to a number to offer,
mm-hmm.
offered it, and we got a counter back, which it wasn't like, sometimes, you know, you just get dead air on the other side right, after you make right. an offer. So we got a counter that was really not off of our initial. We were able to get it done. So, and you know, it just seems so, I mean, the building is so Lake Como. I mean, like, it's such Northern
yeah.
Italian.
It's hard design. To think about putting like something it's else in gotta there, right?
Be Italian.
It's beautiful.
And we also knew that there was just such that there was a need for like more of a contemporary Italian restaurant. It was something that wasn't being, I thought, represented as much as it could be, or that
right.
there was more space, you know, for something like that.
And you have outdoor space.
Yeah, the patio is so
it's dope.
Yeah, and I just love that building, dude. Yeah, it's dope. For sure.
And you, it's a great building. And you brought a partner in, though.
Correct.
Ben.
So,
Ben Berta.
Is this your first partner?
This is my first partner.
Okay, so this is new. How's that?
It's a new thing. It's great because, I mean, in order to grow, you kind of have to. I mean, you want people who are in and invested and who can be you if you're not there.
Right.
So, he's that for sure. And he's got a great knowledge of European cuisine, spent a lot of time in Italy and Spain and France, and like knows the stuff frontwards and backwards, and also has a great lineage of operations. So he knows, you know, he knows how to set them up. He knows how to like train, he knows how to do all that stuff. So it's I couldn't have asked for kind of more in a partnership in that way, because I, you know, you can't do everything. I mean, eventually you just run out of bandwidth.
Right.
So
right.
you got to start incorporating other people into the fray.
And then Ben, at the same time, just to make things
yeah, right.
more complicated, he's opening another restaurant.
Yeah,
downtown, yeah, bar, wild. Restaurant.
Yeah, simultaneous. I mean, he opened that like legitimately. I was like, are you sure you want to do this? I mean, we're working on this other thing. And he was like, yeah, I can do it. And he was able to pull it off.
This is the place that's next to the Wilma?
Plata.
Plata, okay.
Which has Spanish tapas. And,
yeah, it's like
and
a bar. Service bar.
Yeah, it's a
really
small,
cool.
It's a cool idea.
It's exactly what you see in like Spain. I mean,
right.
It is what it is. Like,
Portugal, a lot of places. Yeah. There are 100 of them.
Spaces that are serving conservatives.
You sit on the bar and you get little small plates of, you know, olives or cheeses or meats, exactly. And you drink local wines and, you know.
And
of course, here we don't drink local wines.
No,
we don't.
No, right.
But regional wines
yeah,
here.
Right.
Do we know what's going into where El Cazador used to be?
I don't.
Uh-oh. I always have a nose.
I'll come
for
back. We can talk about that later.
Let's focus on
He's fast becoming the Mario, what's his name, Battaglia?
Oh, or? don't brand me to that guy.
How about Jeff Ruby? Italy. How about Cincinnati? Italy. Jeff Ruby, who's got about eight places. In
Jeff Ruby.
Yeah, my nephew is his executive chef for Jeff Ruby.
Let's do a quick
Cincinnati.
ID. Jake Depke is our guest here on What Do You Know? Drake, I have a question. So you did some traveling recently because, you know, we're connected via socials, mm-hmm. and you were doing a lot of eating and drinking along the way. Where were you and what were you doing?
Yeah, so I was in the Valtellina, which is like the northern part of Italy. It's kind of a lesser known area. It's part of the Italian Alps. It borders Switzerland. And a buddy of mine has a place out there, so went out there and spent some time with him. It's awesome. It's where, like, the 2026 Olympics are going to be.
Yeah.
Bormio, very cool area. It's, like, it's very Montana, frankly.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, it's, like, mountains, ski resorts, hot springs. Like, it's all the stuff.
It's great
go a little Italian out.
If you go a little south, you have Brescia and you have Lago di Garda, the big lake that looks like Flathead Lake.
Well, yeah. I mean, Como's an hour away from the vault. So, yeah. Like, and it's exactly like Flathead Lake, except that it's like castle towns all over it. And little wood cigarette boats instead of,
yeah.
You know. So it's a very cool area. I had never, you know, if my buddy hadn't got a place out there, I wouldn't have probably ended up there.
And it's really neat.
It's awesome. And there's this green belt that goes around, like, the... It's kind of midway up the mountains,
yeah,
and that's where everyone lives. Like, all the towns are kind of midway up the mountains because just the way that the thermoclines are there, there's kind of this fog in the valley floor where there's, like, a river. I mean, it's Montana, man. I'm telling
that's
you.
So cool. Yeah.
And then there's this green belt that kind of wraps around the valley.
Yeah.
And it's where they grow the olives, and they got the dairy cows, and they got the grapes, and it's Nebbiolo. So, I mean, it's some of the rarest best wine in the world, and they can grow it in this region. It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting part. A lot of people, when they go to Italy, don't go to northern Italy. They go to Sicily, or they go Rome.
Milan's like the farthest, right?
They'll end up Milan. Right. They won't go north.
How cool is that? How long are you away for?
Right now I can only get away for a couple weeks at a time. So I was there for like 2.5 weeks. Spent most of the time in the Valtellina, some time in Milan, and then we went to Paris for...
Isn't that great, Arnie, to be able to go to Italy for 2.5 weeks, and it's work?
It's work.
I taught there for 5 summers and then for a 2-week intensive class.
And then at the end of the class, when students all were done, I would take a week or 10 days and travel around that part of Italy, mostly the northern part. And, you know, the southern wing of that is like Milan, Bergamo, Verona, and then Venice. And then above that are the lakes, and then above that are the mountains.
Beautiful.
It's really a fantastic area.
It's where like Barolo is, which is like, I mean, it's only 2 hours from Barolo and Alba, where the famous truffles are. So we were there doing Truffle Festival, which is awesome.
Yeah.
You walk through, and everyone's got their little truffles, and you smell them, and they take, you know, so proud of them. And it's like, so
I'm lucky if I travel to Anaconda for business. I mean, this is great.
You got to work on this, man.
I know we got to.
Yeah, but I'm sure you can figure it out.
Did you have to go to Japan?
I haven't been recently, but yeah, I mean, I have spent quite a bit of time in Japan.
What did you think of that, like, when you were traveling there?
I love it. Yeah. I think Japan's amazing.
Everyone that goes loves it.
I think it's amazing. It's got some of the best food culture probably in the world. Yeah. I mean, there's more French Michelin star restaurants in Tokyo than there are in Paris.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's just wild. Like, the dedication to the craft and the detail and, like, I mean, it's astounding. Like, as far as the best food city in the world, in my opinion, it's Tokyo.
Tokyo is fantastic.
Yeah.
One of the things, I have a very limited bucket list after all these years of traveling.
Right.
But there's one place in Japan that's on my bucket list, and it's near Mount Fuji. It's the oldest hotel in the world.
Oh, wow.
It's been in the same family for 57 generations.
Oh, my God. 57?
57. It opened in 1072 or something like that. And it's still there, and they've obviously upgraded it, you know, 150 times or whatever. But it has this picturesque setting at the base of, you know, Mount Fuji, which most people have seen, that, you know, white-capped, gorgeous mountain. It's kind of like Mount Rainier, their version of Mount Rainier.
Yeah, it kind of looks like that.
But, you know, it would be interesting to stay at the oldest hotel in the world.
It would be.
I mean, the stories, you know, the history, hearing people, and being in the same family for all those generations.
Well, that's the way all those sake houses are.
Yeah.
There's one called Pride of the Village, right?
Right.
And it's on its 55th generational leader. So, like, grandfather to son, or, you know, father to son, father to son, father to son for 55 generations.
Yeah, it's just incredible how that could
So zoom in a little bit. So internationally, Tokyo is your place. How about domestically?
For food. I mean, it's hard to beat New York, but I mean, LA is also extremely good. It's more of like treasure hunting there, but mm-hmm. I mean the quality is definitely there. And then Chicago, I mean, Chicago is probably the best food city in the U.S. in my opinion. It's probably Chicago,
but I don't want to go to Chicago right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you gotta.
I'm heading.
It's
in
crazy.
April.
You gotta wade through April. The violence, but yeah, I mean, like, but the food is on point.
No, I know.
If you like a certain sliver of the food, you know, pie. Going in April to New Orleans, and they have, I mean, if you like Creole food, if you like that kind of low country stuff, there's 40 good restaurants.
For sure.
You could never in a month go to all the good places there.
I would agree. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to distill it into that because there's so much, I mean, there's so much good stuff. And I think what's cool about the way the whole technological exchange of like recipes and ideas, it's like you're really finding good food in a lot of more remote places. I mean,
it's where good chefs end up going, right?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, there's a good chef somewhere.
Club.
Yeah.
Big Fork.
Yeah.
Go to Big Fork.
How about Miami?
There's, you know, if you follow the Spanish, money. Good Spanish restaurants down there, good Brazilian restaurants.
So, I mean, you're starting to see the chefs aren't as like,
right?
They don't have to be in like LA or Chicago or New York.
No.
Like before, if you wanted, you had to go and work in New York and work under a good chef. But now it's all open source. Stuff now, so you're starting to see that. Look, I can live in a place like Missoula, Montana, and you know,
make a good living, make good food,
make good food, make good living, do all that.
So
but could you live in Indianapolis? Question. Not to pick on Indianapolis. I'm sure there's some good restaurants there, but it's not really.
Well, how about Cincinnati? You've spent time in Cincinnati.
I mean, Cincinnati has a bunch of good restaurants. They used to have more starred restaurants. They're the two of the biggest restaurants there, you know, have since gone by the wayside. But they have other little sort of jewels, like Aglamese's Ice Cream and Chocolate Shop that's been in the same location for 100 years in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Greek family moving, you know, there 100 years ago. Or even if you're into, you know, Skyline Chili, it's been there 100 years.
For 100 years.
Yeah, Greek family doing the same sort of thing.
They say it's like the golden age of travel. I think it's like, to be the golden age of travel, you have to have the services as you're traveling. And so I think that's what we're seeing right now is that we're seeing that, like,
well, food is
food is getting better along the
trail. It's becoming the lead now. If you go look at some of the upscale cruise lines now, where, you know, Ritz-Carlton has cruises, and you have Windstar, you have Regent, you have Seabourn. They're all publicizing James Beard Award chef is coming on the cruise to, you know, to oversee what we're going to prepare for. You know, 400 people. You know, but the food is now part of the menu. People don't want
part of the deal. Like you can't just say, oh, we're going to do a beef Wellington or something and throw some green beans at them and be done. Like, no, the food has to be part of it.
Well, the one place you did leave out, which I wanted to just loop back into, and you've been there a lot, is I remember when you used to go to Vegas and you're looking for the 99-cent shrimp special.
Oh, right.
Well, now Vegas every name restaurant has – every name chef in the world practically has got a place now Vegas.
That's true, for sure. I mean, they've been able to attract, like, all the star chefs. And so you're right. I mean, that is probably one of the culinary destinations now.
Tell us about Florabella. Let's talk a little bit about that.
New place.
Talk about that. Like, talk about the menu. What's the inspiration behind all of that and what your vision is?
Yeah. Before we start, the name. Mm-hmm. Where did the name come from? How'd you come up with Florabella?
You know, we just – Ben and I kicked it around, and, Florabella was kind of the one that flowed to the top. It's, you know, it's kind of a play on Beautiful Flower, even though it's not actually literally right, but – It just looks right. It sounds right.
It sounds right and it looks right.
And it's near Rose Park, you know, it's like a flower in Missoula. I don't know.
And flour you can use in an Italian restaurant to make pizza and bread and all that.
Exactly.
Kind of
there's a lot of double entendre going on there.
So. Yeah, exactly.
So the menu and the vibe.
Yeah, so I mean, once again, that the vibe is like really super critical for me now. Like the design and I really think that's a super critical piece. So you know, it was a beautiful building. Hats off to Peter Lambros for what he built. And
it's beautiful.
He really did create a beautiful building. But we needed to update it. We needed to touch pretty much every surface in there. I mean, the only thing that we didn't was the floor. But we felt that it needed to be done in a different way. It wasn't necessarily worse than what he had or anything like that, but we just wanted, or better than what he had going on, but we just felt like it needed an update. So we had to go through and touch every surface and change a lot of stuff, and then we had to update the kitchen for kind of what we wanted to do. So I mean, it had to be changed. So that was the first thing, and then we knew that we needed like a big piece of center artwork just because of the way the building is shaped. It's like it's a box, right?
Right.
With a very tall ceiling. So we were like, what are we going to put on the ceiling? You know, it was.
Well, you know, Michelangelo fresco, right? Of course. You
got right. The fresco was up there. And we're like, man, you know, that's kind of our style. So it just so happened that we got in contact with this Wolf Magritte, who's like a fabricator here in town. And he works with this artist, Kendall Buster, who's out of New York, and he's like, look, I bet Kendall will do something. She's never done something on this side of the country before, or, you know, nothing in Montana. We've never installed anything in Montana. And it just so happens that their workshop is here in Missoula. So we would love to do something. So it just became a great marriage there with those guys. And we did that big piece of artwork in the middle of the room. So that was like how those elements kind of came to be. It was just sort of things kind of just fell into place, which was really fun to watch.
And then you redesigned a little bit of the concept. I mean, before, when it was open for coffee in the morning, you walked into the whole main restaurant. Now you have sort of a coffee. Yeah. What used to be the pottery alcove has now sort of become the
So that was like Peter really wanted it to be like a daytime thing and then kind of felt himself pushed into doing night, where we're coming from a different direction.
Right.
We're saying, look, we're more of like night and we're going to figure out how to do the day. But right. I mean, he really helped us in the sense of like setting up that lunch culture, because then we realized that we couldn't just do the cafe, because that was the original idea, was that little cafe on the side was going to be kind of our lunch. And it was more to be like, hey, it's just here for,
right.
You know, you're just getting espresso and maybe like a little pastry or biscotti or maybe a little panini. It was meant to be kind of small service.
Right.
But the demand was so much for lunch because of what it had been before. So sure. Like, oh, my God, we have to do lunch now. Like, we can't not open for lunch because it had already been such established in that way. So we kind of went from the other way. We knew that it was going to be a nighttime and designed it that way.
Okay.
And then added the lunch, which we had to do pretty much immediately, which we hadn't planned on doing.
Well, because it's sort of the university neighborhood kind of crowd that would, you know, go there at lunch.
Right.
I mean, it was just a go-to
place. Yeah, it's their
place.
Neighborhood spot.
It's right. A neighborhood spot, mm-hmm. But they want a better, you know, they don't want to just have a lunch encounter neighborhood spot. They want to have a real restaurant.
To relax.
Right, exactly.
Well, my observation just going inside is seeing that it's laid out in a more, it feels a little more full. It feels more like a restaurant. It seemed to be a lot of open space when it was Cafe Dolce.
Well, because he had designed it as like to be kind of specifically that way. That was
right.
His vision.
Well, originally when they opened, it was going to be a coffee place.
It was a coffee place that had ice cream. And so, you know, you kind of find yourself getting kind of forced in certain directions based on demand and things like that. So I think they kind of got they were like, okay, we have to do this. We have to do this.
Right.
We have to do this. And, you know, it's something that you struggle with as a restaurant owner, because you're like, look, this is what I want. But it's like, okay, well, it doesn't really matter what you want in a way. I mean, it does. You have to stay like true to your vision, but it's still you're still serving people and this whole thing is
like.
People. And it's, you know, you got to kind of play this balance of like, look, this is what we have in mind, but this is what people
want. And what about the menu? Like talk about the menu.
Yeah. So the menu, you know, was conceptualized, and Michael Hannigan, who we brought on, is our executive chef for it. You know, I don't have the bandwidth to do that portion of it anymore, and, you know, Ben doesn't have the bandwidth because he's doing the operation side for the, you know, for the entirety of the project, so you can't, like, so we brought in Michael, and Michael's very good. He's very diligent, very hardworking, very talented, creative guy, so he's been a lifesaver in that way. And then the crew he brought on is very professional and very good. So it's really dependent on that team, because, mm-hmm. I mean, you can want to do a lot of cool stuff, but, you know, you got to make sure that you can execute all that stuff.
Right,
so
right.
So having him be a part of the team is really critical. But, you know, the original thing was we just wanted to do kind of more of a contemporary Italian, but what that really means is, like, we really just want to be making pasta and making our own bread and making our own, because that's Italian food, man. I mean, like,
right.
Italian food is supposed to be simple, but with, like, good ingredients, good execution, cooked correctly, you know, temped correctly. Like, pasta's inherently not that hard, but it is. Like,
right.
It is. Like,
you can screw pasta up.
You can screw it up really easily because of its simplicity.
Right.
So you got to be kind of exact on how you do it. So, like, but that, you know, we want to make it so that it's a place where people don't feel like, you know, threatened by the menu, but there's also a lot of cool stuff on it.
Right.
But, you know, Italian is a familiar cuisine. Like,
sure.
It's like these flavors are familiar. We're talking about cheese and pork and chicken and beef and then, like, you know, and
tomato.
I mean, this is stuff that, like, it's not like the sushi world where it's like, okay, here's some sea urchin. And people are like, well, what the hell is that? You know, so it is different in that regard, but you have to, because it's something that everyone recognizes, you have to be really good at it.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of bakeries in town.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you decide to make your own?
I think it's just like, it's such an Italian thing again, man. You got to make your own stuff, man. So, our baker is in from Wild Crumb out of Bozeman, and, you know, they were just nominated for a James Beard or whatever. And she's really talented and she's really good. And it's so fun for her to, like, it's fun for me to watch her, like, geek out on that side. And then it just makes it a house thing. And it's like, it's house pasta, it's house sauce, it's house bread. Like, you know, we're making our stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
somebody, I was there for coffee and then I took one of your loaves, the olive loaf.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on trying to lose weight. And by the time I got home, a third of the loaf was gone. Because it was exactly, it was perfect.
Right.
It had the crunchy, crispy
Yes.
Crust and the soft, warm, and in inside. And it had the I mean, it was really well done.
Yeah, she's really tough.
It was really good.
They're having some fun. It's going to be fun.
What are the
watch.
Hours are the of the?
So the cafe is open. So currently we're not open during Mondays, which eventually we probably will change that.
Right.
But we just kind of need like prep day and order day. Like
regroup
just
on this.
Especially early on. We just need to make sure that everything, it gives us the time to catch up. It also gives us time to do some like little odds and construction projects and stuff. So right now we're closed on Mondays. And then the cafe, which is the coffee shop, that opens at 8 o'clock and that goes till 2 o'clock. And then the lunch kicks off at like 11 and that goes, you know, through the night into four.
Are you doing sandwiches at the cafe?
So the cafe is more of like your pickup pastry bread, like biscotti, your coffee,
right?
Like, and we may kind of
move there.
We may kind of move into more of like small grab and go panini type of stuff from there. But no, the lunch kicks off at 11 and that's when it's like sandwiches and salads and pizza.
Well, it's more like a real Italian place. Italians don't eat heavy breakfasts. You don't go to an Italian coffee place. Just a little something to go with the coffee.
That's right. That's sort of
to go with your latte or your cappuccino in the morning.
Right.
You know, one of the things I mentioned to someone the other day about spending time in Italy, and I think Drake knows this, is somebody will say, let's go for coffee in the morning. And it's not unusual for them to stop off at two or three places on the way to work.
Yeah.
They go to one for their cappuccino. They go to one because they got a nice little pastry that they like, and they get another. Then they get an espresso there, and then they hit the last one. And that's a typical thing, which is very unusual.
Yeah.
You know, in New York, you go to Dunkin', and grab your coffee and a donut, and you're gone.
When there, you're swinging in for espresso all the time. I mean, like, oh, I'm feeling a little peckish. Like, okay, let's just get an espresso. Like, I mean, it's effective. It works.
Yeah,
like, it's like, hey, I'm going to just go have a little quick espresso and then, like, move on with my day.
So I'm in Brescia, and my friend there, Guido Cupolo, says, I'll pick you up and take you to the university because I was teaching the university. And it's like 15 minutes. I said, well, no, I'll walk. He said, no, I'll pick you up. We'll get some coffee. Took me 45 minutes to an hour.
To get
there. Because we stopped at, we got to stop here for this and here for this.
Well, you're bringing up a good point, which is time. Drake, how do you split your time between three restaurants?
I mean, it's hard. Don't get me wrong. I mean, but it's really, you're only as good as your people, right? So like having like getting them to buy into the vision and everyone's like kind of on the same page, then you don't have to be there all the time. I mean, there is no possible way I could be at any place all the time. Like this is what we're doing and we all agree on it. And it's kind of like, and everyone kind of knows what they're responsible for. I mean, it's many hands, you know, make the load light.
Well, let's say I was at Sakatumi the other day for sushi, and they had a sushi that was new on the menu that had foie gras. Approve new items that go on the menu because they have cost implications, right? If somebody's buying foie gras, it's more expensive than just, you know, tuna or salmon.
I mean, I'm still, there's certain things I really care about.
Right.
And like, you know, I mean, do I care what wine comes on and off the wine list? Not really. It's not like, I mean, I do care in the sense that it's like, I do want great wine on the menu, but it's not like if they move that around a little bit, as long as they're in their cost stuff, it doesn't really bother me. Things that I really care about are like, you know, the management hires and who's on like kind of that team, because that's somebody that I'm going to be dealing with. So that's that's really important for me. And then the menu is like, it's my background. And I really care about it. So like,
and you enjoy that.
And it's what I do. So it's like, I'm still very much involved in the menu, and we all work together. We can and come up with what's coming on or coming off and things like that. Still doing some recipe creations.
Let's take a quick break. Our guest is Drake Depke. He is with now Florabella, but also Michi Ramen and Sakatumi. Back after this. Arnie, we are back with our guest, Drake Depke.
So at the same time you're developing new restaurants, there's a lot of other new restaurants that have come into Missoula, and many of them are in the same price point. So what's your thoughts on the new competition that's brewing? Because there's just so many dollars you can spend on, you know, high quality food, and our population is not New York. And so what's your thoughts about how
I think it's good.
The new competition?
I think it's good. I think it's that, you know, rising tides raise all ships. I think like you want to have it, it also sets the standard at a higher, it raises the bar basically for all of us to make sure that we're on top of our stuff. So I actually think it's all positive, to be honest with you.
Yeah. The only blowback that I've heard just is that, and it's happened, it's not just here, it's everywhere. It's that the prices have now kind of not just inched up, they've kind of grown by
inflation's
more.
Been pretty real. So I mean, like the fact is we're paying twice as much for crab that now than we were last year.
Yeah.
So we can't raise our prices by twice as much, even though our cost has gone up twice as much in some cases. So like, I mean, it's across the board. So like, it's one of these things where we're all kind of having to play this dance a little bit. It's not like we're saying the customer fronts the whole load, but like we can't front the whole load either. So.
No.
Are you okay with not, you're just beer and wine there, right?
At Flora, yeah.
At Flora.
Mm-hmm.
Any chance of getting a full license?
No, I think it's perfect with that. I think it's exactly
you don't need it. Right?
Yeah, I think it's what
not fits with Italian. That, Italian fits is that wine, model.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It'd be nice to have an Aperol spritz, but we don't need it. There's some very cool Italian cocktails out there, but it's not. It's not
essential to the operation.
Right.
So what are we missing in the market that we don't have? If you were raising your magic wand over everything.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely plenty of room for some other stuff for sure. I mean, I think that where's the dim sum at? I think there's plenty of room in the breakfast space. I think there's, and I think there's the Middle Eastern Levant cuisine space. I think so. Right. I definitely think there's some space in the market for sure.
So you
I'm not gonna say anymore.
No, okay, okay. We'll hear about that on a future show. Yeah.
When you're not working, how do you maintain your 6 handicap?
I don't.
Good. Then we're gonna take you out and play golf.
This is your time, man.
What do you? You're right. These are your years. Well, what do you do when you want to let off some steam besides travel and play
travel's
golf?
A big one, to be honest with you. Yeah, golf's big. I mean, just getting outside, getting onto the rivers, getting on the lakes, getting out in the woods. Just going out. I mean, I still love going out to eat, man. Don't get me wrong. Like, I mean, as much even though I'm in it all the time, like that is a great. That's still my all time favorite thing to do. And
us too.
Number one, good. What are you eating tonight?
Yeah.
What are we going
to
eat?
If you were to have another place up at Flathead Lake, another restaurant up in Flathead Lake, what would you do?
I'd probably do ramen.
Yeah.
Word. In Big Fork?
I mean, if I was in Big Fork, I'd probably do ramen.
What if you were in Lakeside? I live near there.
That's a good one. Maybe Italian.
Italian is always a
seller. Maybe Italian because it's like there's a lot of good farms and stuff up there, and that lends itself to Italian.
I would agree. And by the way, you know what I just heard turned over once again is the lodge at Lake Mary Ronan.
Yeah,
which is a great location, but boy, are they encumbered by
staffing is a different animal up there.
It very much is, and a lot of and land and just everything. But anyway, how do we find out more about the new restaurant and your other restaurants? What's your website addresses? Your details.
So it's Sakatumi Sushi and then Michi Ramen Bar. Those are both .coms. And then FlorabellaMissoula.com.
God. All right, Arnie.
Drake, it's been too long.
We're going to have
you come back sooner next time and hear about your exploits and all your updates.
That sounds good, man.
I would love that. Drake, great to see you. Arnie, I'll see you next week.
Take care, Scott. See you.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.